Someone told you knee pain is just getting older? They were wrong. The Joint Relief Institute offers fast joint pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we are on the spring day along Michigan Avenue in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Welcome to Friday. The weekend is just around the corner. Are you driving right now? Look above your rearview mirror. Do you have a camera in your car? If you have a Tesla, chances are pretty good you do. If you have a Tesla, good for you. Some Cadillacs as well have cameras in the sort of, if you will, cockpit of the car, and they are facing you. What's with that? We'll talk to a reporter from Consumer Reports, Jeff Plungis, a little bit later in the program, and he looked at privacy and cameras facing you in your own car. We start on Fridays with Andrea Haines. She is here, the editor of Blue Sky in the Chicago Tribune. Welcome, Andrea. Nice to see you again.
Thanks. You too, Steve.
It seems like, you know, I try not to talk about the same things all the time, but Facebook sometimes is just unavoidable. And it certainly was this week. You know, he had a big event, Zuckerberg, earlier this week. You guys wrote a story about how he's donating $14 million to Chicago Public Schools for some, I don't know, is it experimental education?
Yeah, it is. So Heidi Stevens at the Tribune wrote about this. Mark Zuckerberg sending $14 million to CPS. And the group that they're working with is a Chicago startup. It's a nonprofit, but it is something of a startup called Leap Innovations. And they do these personalized learning programs.
Right. So each kid has a mentor in each school that where they use it. And it's already in the schools, right? The $14 million will be used to expand it.
Exactly. Yep.
And the kids meet with the teacher. The teacher teaches each kid student individually, and when the individual student's not getting attention, he's working with others in a corner doing things like that.
Yeah, it's an effort to sort of have the classroom be much more collaborative. You know, the student may be working one-on-one with somebody, trying to teach them in the way that they learn best.
I have three words for you.
Other students are collaborating.
Three words for you. Montessori.
It does sound like that, doesn't it?
I'm reading the article. I'm like, wait, they're spending cash on something that's already been tried and is successful. My kids went to Montessori school, the preschool, and that's exactly what this reads like. But they say that you're seeing success. I mean, Montessori schools go to older kids too, but they're trying it here in public education.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And based on the early results, I mean, there still will, of course, be more testing and, you know, many more students to study as this rolls out more. But it sounds like it's had an impact on reading scores, less so for math so far, but it does seem to be helping with reading. So I think we'll have to stay tuned and see how this all works out.
And Janice
Jackson.
But this
will bring it into quite a few more schools.
And Janice Jackson, the chief there, says, you know, we're looking at it. We don't know yet. And I also like that she says, look, a lot of these programs go to the high-performing schools. We're not going to do that here. We're going to go to some of the underachieving and see if they can help that way.
Exactly.
Yeah. Facebook this week talked about getting into the dating business. Do we need another dating app?
I know, right? It's kind of funny because you think almost of Facebook as being a way that people do reconnect maybe with people from years ago and, you know, not calling it a dating app, but people certainly meet and date that way, right?
I guess that does happen. I think they call that a rekindle.
I know, that's hilarious. I hadn't heard that term, but that's a good one.
I just made it up.
The rekindle.
Yeah.
I think you should maybe TM, get a little patent on that.
If I just say trademark, does it count?
TM.
What's interesting to me about this is that it looks like Facebook looks at what others do. And they've done this with Instagram. They look at what others can do well, and then they take it because they're bigger.
Yes. So like Instagram stories is obviously familiar, you know, to us from Snapchat type of, you know, the short disappearing video. There are other things. And now they're looking, you know, this is basically what Match is doing.
Match had some fun with the idea, too.
With its companies, including Tinder and OkCupid. I like their quote, which they threw a little shade at Facebook about privacy and basically said, we're surprised at the timing, given the personal and sensitive data that come into play around dating. So
it kind of is true. If you're worried about losing access to your private information, I don't know if you'd want to give Facebook.
First thing to do is put it on Facebook, right?
So that's one example. The other is what they're calling Facebook Watch, which I had not heard anything about, but that's kind of a borrow too.
Yes. Similar to House Party, which allows you to do group chats around video. So they're trying out some new things. You know, they are, as you point out, they're in the news every day, maybe more than once a day sometimes.
Yeah.
But those were two of the big pieces of news out of there.
So if I wanted to watch ER, Emergency, what's the show? I'm trying to think of Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, yeah.
If I wanted to watch Grey's Anatomy with all my girlfriends, we could all do it in different...
You can group chat about
and
it.
And we could group chat while we're watching it. That's not going to happen in my house. Okay, tell me about this group space, this co-working space from Germany that seems to be moving in big time to Chicago.
Yeah, so Ryan Ory wrote about that this week. This is a firm called Rent24, which already has a smaller space here, about 15,000 square feet, but its next plan is to open a location with 100,000 square feet of space right across the street from where we are now, basically at 500 North Michigan.
And so they want to come into the States big time, in Chicago specifically. What is it that's attracted to Chicago for this German company?
They do. So they like that we have a lot of startups, but we also have a lot of big companies. They find that big companies like to use those spaces. You know, they may want to locate workers in a particular area, or they may have remote people who sometimes want to be downtown, or this or that. You know, all these different kinds of arrangements.
Oh, new facility is going to have a gym? I mean, this is going to be like... I mean, this is going to be the new way we go to the office, isn't it?
I think so. I really do. I think, you know, offices have smaller footprints. People work more remotely, but you still might need to get out of your house. There's just, you know, you might work in different cities throughout the week, and this allows you to do that, where they have different locations where you can set up shop. And this company is also getting into the co-living concept, which will be another sort of next level thing for us to talk about as that starts happening.
Yeah, we've talked about that a little bit. I like that idea, I think. Yeah. Like, my daughter's graduating from college, and she wants to move to L.A., and I think a co-living spot might be good for her. She doesn't agree with me. But speaking of going to college, this lesson, I don't really know how I feel about this next story.
Yes.
Bill Gates buying real estate in Hyde Park.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, right? So this, you know, it was one of those things through, you know, a lawyer. You kind of had to track down the information. So Bob Goldsboro did that and found a Seattle attorney who tends to work for Bill Gates and Melinda Gates were the people behind this purchase of a $1.25 million home in Hyde Park.
And it's really just across the street or down the street from the University of Chicago.
A few doors down from the University of Chicago.
Bill or Melinda, they're not going to start teaching at the University of Chicago.
No, but they have a son named Rory who is college age. So this obviously potentially connects the dots here that this very nice house may be the college pad of a Junior Gates.
So good for Rory to get into the University of Chicago. I'm sorry, Rory, that we've all seen pictures of your house.
I know, right? It's pretty swank.
Yeah, it's a pretty nice house. But Andrea Haynes here. What's in Red Eye this weekend?
So Red Eye's all at the Derby this weekend. Kentucky Derby parties. And then it's also Cinco de Mayo. They're actually both hitting on the Saturday this year. Derby always does. Cinco de Mayo doesn't always.
Cinco de Derby.
Cinco de Derby. And we also had some news this week, which was that the parade was canceled.
Right.
So if you were planning to head out to the parade in, you know, the Little Village area, that is not happening
this year. It's nice to know political spats still live in the 21st
century. Even in the entertainment section,
right? We'll talk next week. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
All right, Tom Gimbel is in the studio. He's the CEO of LaSalle Network. Tom, thanks for coming by.
Always good to see you, Steve.
Okay, so next fall, you're going to take your son, right, to school.
Yep.
First child in college.
First child.
Oh, my God. I remember how traumatic it was.
Everybody says that. And you know what? It's starting to hit me.
This weekend, I will go to my daughter's graduation.
Oh, congratulations.
And I'm so proud of her graduating from the University of Dayton, magna cum laude. So, I'm very
excited.
Is
she going to California?
Apparently so.
Against your better judgment.
So she's book smart, but that's about all I could say. Spin that mic a little bit closer. To spin it toward you. There you go. I'm very proud of her. It's exciting.
God, you're old.
I am so old, and you will be too one day. Okay, the good news really is that she's leaving college in the hottest job market in the history of the world.
Ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
Things are looking pretty good, right?
I've been doing this for almost 25 years, and I have never seen a better job market.
Okay, so the jobless rate dropped, and I'm sorry, you know, I should have done a little more homework on this, but the jobless rate dropped to 3.9%.
Correct.
Lowest since the Clinton years, 2000. But I was told that there's a guy, Greg McBride, who's on with us from Bankrate, said a lot of that had to do, again, with people not looking for work, so it wasn't as pretty of a number as it might have been.
Let me tell you this. If I would have said to you 10 years ago, if I would have said to anybody 10 years ago, it's going to be at 3.9%, nobody would have said, oh, but that won't include people who are participating. These economists can spin anything.
You know, it is true when you look for, you see what I, and this comes up with me, where I think I've seen the brightest, happiest number ever, and then you find a reason not to like it.
Oh, it's too hot out today, Steve.
Jobs. Well, the jobs, 164,000 jobs.
Yeah.
That's fewer than we were expecting.
You know, I got...
Okay.
You're in the desert and someone brings you water and you ask why it doesn't have bubbles in it.
So tell me about all those numbers and all the different readings of it, how it's playing out in the street.
It's 164,000 jobs added. And the fact is there's a skills gap. There's an acceptable unemployment rate. And what that used to be is about 2.5% in a normal economy in the 50s, 60s, 70s. 2.5% of the population's unemployable. Today, that number is a little higher, I think, probably around 3, maybe a little over because of the skills gap.
Okay, but and that's not even what we would consider full employment, right? I mean, we've got to be really close to
We're very close to full employment.
Which means anyone who wants a job, there's
a job there. Exactly, yeah. But a lot of people, so the long-term unemployed, they don't want to go be a hostess at the restaurant. They don't want to go work at Home Depot. They don't want to go work at Starbucks. Well, the jobs are there. Whether it's the job you like, sounds like an entitlement factor that isn't addressing millennials. It's against everybody. So now you get kids coming out of college. My guess is that we'll see July, August, September employment numbers will be the best we've seen maybe ever.
Really? With these people coming out from college and getting jobs?
Get hired. Yeah, I think those employment numbers. No, what we're not seeing is wage growth. So that's the one thing that economists will go, oh, there's no wage growth. The reason there's no wage growth is because it's a global economy. You're not competing against your neighbor. You're competing against India and China and the Philippines and South America and Europe.
Okay, but wasn't some of that tax cut for corporations supposed to trickle down to wages?
Ton of bonus money went out, right? We saw that. Well,
I don't want a bonus. I want a salary increase.
I hope no one's listening on that.
I don't get bonuses. So. What are you kidding? It doesn't matter if I want it or not.
Listen, there's always ways to manipulate the data. And when you look at whether wages are increasing, a lot of it's off of service positions. So waiters and waitresses and that type of stuff, right? So it's not necessarily white collar jobs. And so you can slice it up any way you want. Unemployment's at 3.9%. The stock market's up, whether it was Obama or Trump or some
Jimmy Carter. Let's give it to Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter being president. Things are great from a job perspective.
All right, let's go out this weekend and get it, my friend.
Let's go get jobs.
Tom Gimbel. Find out more at
LaSalleNetwork.com and follow me on Twitter at Tom Gimbel.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we are, 12:37 on this Friday afternoon. On a phone line is Joy McBrien. Joy has a great story about what she has accomplished and a remarkable story about how she got there as well. And she'll be actually up at 10,000 Villages in Evanston this weekend. Joy, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I have an email describing you, and it says, angels sing when she walks in the door.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure about that, but it's a very kind description.
Well, I've been listening. I haven't heard it, but I don't doubt it after reading about you and watching your TED Talk and doing all of that. I want to get to Fair Anita, and I guess we'll have to do that in a different way. We'll circle around. But first, tell me what you're doing this weekend up at 10,000 Villages.
Yeah, I'm really excited to join the Evanston store this weekend in celebration of World Fair Trade Day, which is actually next weekend. But I will be there doing a trunk show with our Fair Anita products. We sell jewelry, accessories, and clothing. And we'll be there, this weekend showing our stuff and sharing our fair trade stories.
Did you think when you started all of this that you'd be celebrating a weekend like this?
No, not entirely. I've been really lucky in that the community has really gotten behind us, and Chicago has a phenomenal fair trade presence. So I'm excited to join them.
All right. I said in introducing you that it's a remarkable story in what you're doing, but also in how you got there. So tell me how a sexual assault brought you from, I think it was Minnesota, to Peru and then to Fair Anita.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was a senior in high school, I experienced rape for the first time, and I didn't really know how to process it. I started doing a lot of research. I've always been a nerd, so that was kind of my go-to response. I did a lot of research. I learned that Peru has the highest reported rate of domestic violence in the world, at nearly 70% of women reporting experiencing domestic violence. And just because of what was going on in my own head, my mental health and different things as a result of the trauma I'd experienced, I knew that I needed to take action on this issue of sexual violence in order to heal myself. And create a community around me as well. So I ended up as a,
The way to make yourself better was to help others who maybe went through what you were dealing with. And that brought you to Peru?
Yeah, kind of random. And scared my parents a little bit
as
a 19-year-old to be traveling to a community I'd never been to. But I worked with a group of local women in Chimbote, Peru, which is one of the largest poorest cities in the world, to build a battered women's shelter there. So worked alongside a lot of really incredible women. And that's actually where I met Anita, who's the namesake for the company that I run now.
And how is it then that you created this fair trade business helping women around the world?
Yeah, so I learned that financial insecurity is the number one reason why women stay in abusive partnerships. And so I kind of started like percolating on this idea, like if we could create economic opportunity for women around the world, like how could we positively transform these communities, right? The UN states that for every dollar a woman makes, between 80 and 90 cents goes back to her families and communities, as opposed to 30 to 40 cents by men. And that's a global statistic. And so looking at, okay, how can we include women in a more formalized workforce so that they can contribute, they can create a livelihood for themselves, support their families, and if necessary, leave an abusive partner.
And so you identify artisans, or you identify people who have a craft, or do you teach women a craft or an art so that they can participate? Or how is it that you create the material there so that people can buy it here?
That's a great question. Yeah, we do a little bit of both. We're working with women around the world. In some cases, we've started up these artisan groups ourselves, and we're teaching crafts to women. In a lot of cases, there's a lot of like more traditional crafts that are done in different communities, like generations-old traditions. And we're trying to partner with these women to create more modern designs, but using those same traditions. And so it's something that we can really easily sell to a more mainstream audience here in the United States.
And you
so,
work,
yeah, it's kind of both.
You're in 16 countries around the world?
Yep, 16.
What's the most, this is a weird question, I guess, but is any of the countries considered affluent? I mean, I suppose women around the world could use a leg up, and it might not always be in the excessively poor countries.
Yeah, it's a good question. Right now, we're working with more developing countries,
right.
As they say. I think probably the most affluent country that we work with is Chile. It's a pretty developed country in Latin America, but there's still, of course, you know, in every country, the United States as well, there's people who are in need of fair-paying, sustainable work.
So, I think people go to these shops, maybe they go to 10,000 Villages in Evanston, and it's a fair trade store, and they feel good about it, but they might not understand how it works or just exactly how the artisans get paid. So, from what I read, you guarantee the women who are with you that would make three times what's considered the local minimum wage, right? How does that work? How does the commerce of it all work?
Yeah, so we pay at least three times the minimum wage and make sure we're paying above a livable wage in all the different areas. We also provide health insurance, educational scholarships, and welfare assistance to the artisans that we're working with. And that's all through partnerships with different artisan groups around the world. And so how the money flow kind of goes, we actually pay the artisan partners between 50 to 100% of the final cost up front. So when we're doing design work, before we actually even place the final order, we've already paid artisans.
Okay.
And this is a really critical part of fair trade when you're working in marginalized communities around the world. Like, we need to make sure that people are like able to eat and support their children and all these things while they're actually producing the product. Whereas in a traditional retail model, you wouldn't pay your suppliers until, 30,
sure.
50, I mean, 90 days after you actually receive the product.
Or if you're a typical artisan or an artist, I mean, there's no guarantee the money's coming in. You have to create and then hope to sell. In this case, there is a bit of a guarantee. If you participate, the money will come in.
Absolutely.
All right. So we'll see you this weekend up at 10,000 Villages. Is there a particular time, or how do people get more information about Fair Anita?
Yeah, we will be at 10,000 Villages Evanston store from 11 to 5, both Saturday and Sunday. And you can always find us online. It's fairanita.com. Got free shipping for Mother's Day. The code is MOMS18.
That is Joy McBrien. Joy, I didn't hear it at first, but I kind of hear the angels now. I think we're okay.
Okay.
Thanks for
all
the
right,
great work.
Thank you so much.
Have a great weekend, and I hope we can talk again soon.
Thank you so much, Keith. Have a good one.
You bet. You too. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute. Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing the news, providing input, and breaking down the stories that matter to the world of business. There's a new kid on the block. Canada-based retailer Roots is opening its first Chicago store on Michigan Avenue in a former flagship location of Sephora. This is particularly noteworthy because the Canadian company has a long-term plan to be opening brick-and-mortar stores across the country. With all of the past concerns about brick-and-mortars being in trouble, I've got to ask, have we gotten over the hump? Well, maybe, but the CBOE's Volatility Index has their own hurdle to overcome after allegations are emerging, accusing the gauge that measures the likelihood of hikes and dips in the market of being fixed. The SEC and the Commodity Futures Trading Commission is looking into the issue, as it could have major impacts on the global markets and swing billions of dollars. This is definitely going to take some time to figure out, but no matter the outcome, it's an important part of taking the temperature of the economy. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
All right, we've got the names of the three finalists for the James Tyree Award put together by the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. The winner will be announced at their annual meeting that's coming up on June 5th. I think that you can get tickets for this as well. And we'll have each of these three on the show in the coming weeks so you can get to know them and maybe pick a favorite for yourself. But here we go. Three finalists for the James Tyree Award in 2018. GMA Construction Group. The president is Cornelius Griggs. Met him a few weeks ago. The guy's got just remarkable, inspiring story, and I can't wait for him to sit down and tell you about it. The Ink Factory. This is a fascinating company. They go to meetings or other things, and they will actually draw visual representations of the meeting. So say you're in a really boring board meeting, there's an Ink Factory artist sitting alongside there drawing it for people who understand visually better than they do perhaps orally. So the Ink Factory is the second, and Landmark Pest Management is the third finalist. They work with sustainable pest control, humane pest control. Rebecca Fife is the president and director of research there. So we'll introduce you to each of those three companies coming up in the coming weeks, and good luck to all three. On the phone line right now is Jeff Plunges. He's the deputy for special projects at Consumer Reports. Jeff, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
So, this is one of those stories that I kind of knew about, but didn't realize I didn't know that much about. The idea of data collected by your car and then how it's controlled, who controls it. I didn't realize that. Tell me about Tesla. I think it's their Model 3. There's a camera in the car right now pointed at the driver and the passengers. It's not in use, but it might be one day.
That's right. And, that is the kind of thing that's happening in cars right now that when you start to think about it, it makes you wonder. So this is a camera that is in, it's embedded in the rearview mirror, and it's pointed toward the driver. And we think that one day it may be part of a what's known as a driver monitoring system. And this is more and more with advanced, cars that can almost drive themselves. One of the strategies before the technology is perfected is to have the car kind of watch you and make sure that you're paying attention.
Right.
And we think that's what's going on here. But, when we asked Tesla about the camera, they said it's not turned on yet, and they'll let their customers know when they're ready to turn it on.
Well, Elon made it pretty clear this week he doesn't like to answer questions, so I can understand how you didn't get an answer. But it's in a Cadillac as well?
So Cadillac has something similar that is turned on. And so this is one model, one Cadillac sedan has a feature called Super Cruise, which is like a nearly full self-driving system where you can not only will the car, accelerate itself and brake, but it will steer itself. And you can actually take your hands off the wheel. So there's an infrared sensor on the steering column pointed at the driver, to make sure that the driver is watching the road.
So, Jeff, when I read this story, I was thinking that these were bad things. Like this, well, I shouldn't say bad, but this is something that would be useful to insurance companies. If you get in an accident, they might say you were looking away, or you were texting, or you were reaching back to your daughter, or things like that. That this would be something that might serve society in general, but not necessarily the driver individually. Is that a fair read?
I think you put your finger on it. Right now there are definitely programs underway to collect more granular driving data and by insurance companies. And right now the programs that they have on the road, if you sign up for them, they'll give you a dongle and you plug it in your car and it will transmit back to the insurance company detailed, data about how you're steering, how you're braking, emergency maneuvers, that kind of thing.
Will we have control? Will we have control over this, or is this if we buy a car and get auto insurance, we're just going to have to be part of the system?
Well, that's the question. So right now, these programs are voluntary, and you have to sign up for them, and the insurance companies say they won't raise your rates. They'll only give you a discount. But over time, that could change.
Right.
And it could be more like if you don't want to do it, it'll cost you.
Jeff Plunge is deputy for special projects at Consumer Reports. Check out the article at Consumer Reports. It's fascinating stuff. Thank you for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for having me.